So, Richard, what wonderful beer are you drinking today?
Okay, I'm going to tease you with one first, but this is not a daytime podcast drinking beer, that's for sure. And if you can check that out.
Peppermint beer.
Peppermint crisp tart. So this is a collaboration with Devil's Peak and Cause Effect.
Yeah.
But this is an 11% beer. It's not...
Oh, my word.
That's the same. Yeah, it's beautiful. I've had this on tap. Yeah, yeah. Like a barley wine almost.
Yeah. And peppermint beer sounds disgusting.
Well, peppermint crisp tart. So it's kind of, no, it's a dessert tasting beer. I mean, it doesn't taste like a peppermint crisp
chocolate
dessert straight up. I mean, yeah. It's not a chocolate or anything. Mm, you know, it's just the flavors. It's the way it enhanced flavor.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the one I'm having now. Again, you know, Tiny Keg is doing these amazing little cans.
Juicy Lucy.
This is a Juicy Lucy collaboration. It was a collaboration. It's now just a Devil's Peak regular New England IPA. But as you – let me pause. We'll make this very dramatic. Look at that. So this is a cloudy IPA.
It's a lovely color.
And it's essentially like a fruity beer if you don't know what the IPA is. It's a very nice fruity high hop beer. And this one is just beautifully unfiltered, so that, as I say.
It reminds me of Bone Crusher in terms of its consistency and its color.
Yeah, kind of. Bone Crusher is a vice, though.
Yeah.
So it's got that look and feel.
So
very delicious, though.
Delicious. Mm. Mm. What does it taste like?
Mm, fruity. So it's a very fruity, you get like florals of maybe a little bit of citrusy notes in there. Mm-hmm. What else is in there? Definitely fruity notes, but it's, you know, the hoppiness and the hops flavor is also underlying this. You got a little bit of bitterness.
Yeah.
Well, it's really good.
I've poured myself something I haven't had in ages, and that's a Southern Comfort on the Rocks, which is really nice.
Soco.
Don't you love that sound?
The old classic whiskey glass tumbler sound.
Yeah. Well, it says Glenmorangie on it, but it's got US-style bourbon in it. But Southern Comfort's got such a unique taste.
Yeah, it is a very sweet drink, though. It's the cause of many a headache from my
You can't have too much of it, no.
Yeah, for sure. But there is another thing you should try, and I've got a bottle saved up, but mead is definitely something worth checking out.
What is mead?
Honey fermented beer. So this is the old nectar of the gods, you know, Game of Thrones style. That's what they drink. You know, that's what the kings drink. And it's absolutely delicious. You can actually check this.
Is it a kind of, so it's a beer?
It's a beer, yeah. Look, it looks like there's a few styles. There's only one or two guys making in South Africa at the moment, but there's a few styles. So there's a more authentic one that kind of looks more like a beer.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which is a little fancier, the... Meloria, you can get it on Yuppie Chef, and that's more like a champagne-looking bottle, but it's like a golden nectar-looking drink.
Yeah.
But it is beyond delicious. Very much like a Prosecco, but not. It's a beer. It's a honey-fermented beer. Mm. But yeah, it's going to be big. It's delicious, absolutely. But yeah, it's not a New England IPA.
No. We need to compare notes before the show, so we've got the same stuff on our desks here. So we...
I'll send you a care package every Friday. How's that?
That sounds brilliant. I'll even swing over there and pick it up. How's that?
Yeah, we'll have to have a sample session on the Friday just to have pre-note discussion, and then on the Sunday at least be. Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a good plan, actually.
Friday, 12 o'clock, you'll have your beer.
Right. Shall we stop talking about beer and start talking about tech?
Let's
get this show on the road. I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Richard van Berg.
And this is Talk Central, episode 264 for the week starting 23 June 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube channel, YouTube stream live on Sundays from 1 p.m. And please hit that subscribe button.
On Talk Central this week, massive retrenchments hit MultiChoice.
Also on the show this week, Nashpers gives birth to Protus, Bitcoin goes ballistic, Facebook launches Libra, and Cyril has a dream.
It's Sunday afternoon, we are live streaming on YouTube, and it's time to talk everything technology.
When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
welcome to the show. How are you doing, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, good, good. So let's dive straight in and do our quiz, shall we?
Certainly. First question, how many people may lose their jobs at MultiChoice, the paid TV operator, this week?
And which South African technology company has invested $10 million to become a founding member of Facebook's Libra project?
Third question, EOH this week appointed three new non-execs to its board. Name one of them.
Naspash Foundry has acquired a stake in which South African tech startup for 30 million rand?
And the final question, Vodacom has sold its Vodacom business operations in Nigeria, Zambia, and the Ivory Coast to which company?
As always, answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But it was a short week this week, Rehat. Monday was a holiday, thanks to Sunday being Youth Day. But somehow in those 4 days, more happened in the tech world than normally happens in 2 or 3 weeks.
So yeah.
There's a lot of ground to cover today. So let's dive in. And I think the big local news this week was the news that MultiChoice is looking to potentially retrench as many as 2,194 people. That's a significant number. I'm not sure how many they employ in total, but this is going to affect their call center operations and their walk-in centers. They say that customers are increasingly using digital self-service channels, which is not surprising, and preferring not to walk into customer service centers or to use the call center, which I recall, I haven't used it in a long time, but I recall that MultiChoice contact center was always a bit lousy. It took forever for them to answer the phones and not the most pleasant experience. But always sad when so many people are losing their jobs, especially in this economy. This is a very real case of technology stealing jobs.
Yeah, sadly. I mean, I guess the other repercussions of just the way broadcast and streaming TV is going, you know, there's the forward, if you're looking forward into this business, you know, you need to kind of plan ahead. And that's also a big part of this, I think. You know, they're not going to maybe making as much money, and I think they need to rein in the spending a bit. They do have a massive, beautifully big head office there in Randburg, right?
Just built,
Somebody needs to pay those the rent, I guess.
Yeah,
but in all seriousness, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of this, sadly. You know, as with technology, more can be done with less people, probably more efficiently too, unfortunately, as we've seen.
Yes.
So, I mean, never good. But I guess, you know, we just need to, you know, if they're going to be spin-off industries, spur on other industries, I mean, you know, jobs need to be made in many other ways if we're going to go down that conversation.
Yeah, it's the creative destruction of capitalism, I suppose, and At least, as someone pointed out to me this week, at least they're right-sizing, I hate that term, at least they're making the cuts now when they need to make them rather than doing what an Eskom or another state-owned enterprise would do, which is just carry on employing them and run yourself into all sorts of serious trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you need to keep a close eye on that, right? And running an operation like that certainly can't be cheap by any means. And you know, I can't recall what the numbers were exactly, but they don't seem to be, you know, doing as great as what they should be doing, at least in their projections.
Not at the premium segment. Their numbers on the premium segment were quite weak, actually. They didn't disclose actual numbers, but I spoke to the CFO, Tim Jacobs, this last week, and he said that while they're still doing well in the compact and the cheaper bouquets, the mass market bouquets, as they call them, at the premium segment, they lost slightly more customers than they lost in the last financial year. Last financial year was 40,000, so I would guess it's probably in the 50,000 sort of range customer loss in DSTV premium. I think they've got a serious problem at that premium end of the market. And Calvin Mawela, in the statement that they issued this week on the retrenchments, admitted that they're feeling the competition from what they call the OTT players. I wish they wouldn't call them OTT players. It's such a just call them streaming rivals or something like that. But Netflix and the like are starting to hurt them.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we, you know, the moves they've been making with Showmax and the sports, I think, is a good sign. But it was very interesting that, you know, that they are losing. Obviously, they're losing more on the higher end packages because people are trying to rein in their spending. Yeah. But it also shows that, you know, people don't need a million channels to be happy, right? I mean, you know, we just need good quality content. I would also assume that a lot of those lower end satellite subscriptions are to people that cannot get perhaps other signal, you know, in rural areas where a normal terrestrial aerial just won't cut it.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a bit of that too.
Yes.
But yeah, for where the spending power is, or at least where their advertisers are trying to reach, you know, that audience, their target audience, we've got a lot of choice now. And many people, myself included, many years ago, cut the cord already.
Yeah.
And I don't miss anything.
Yeah.
Go watch a sport somewhere, that's really not a problem. But something is going to start changing, needs to start changing quite a bit more drastically, I think, you know, because these numbers are going to start swaying a lot more, I think, because we're just going to get better services, right?
Indeed. What's really interesting is that MultiChoice has now launched live streaming sport on Showmax, which is a very interesting development. They're showing the ICC Cricket World Cup games on there. Although the way South Africa has apparently been performing, because I don't watch cricket, but apparently the way they've been performing has been absolutely atrocious. And they're also going to be showing the AFCON Bafana games. So I think we're going to see more of that. Obviously, they're going to be very careful about not eating too much into that subscription revenue they get through SuperSport on the traditional side of the business. But increasingly, I think they realize that they're going to have to they're going to have to really start to bulk up that Showmax side of the business. You know, even though it costs only 99 rand a month currently, because those big streaming guys like Netflix and Amazon are going to be bidding for sports rights in the not too distant future, I reckon.
And I would wager a bet that they have equally deep pockets, probably deeper pockets for those rights, you know. And at the end of the day, that's what matters, right? Who's going to pay for the most for those rights? Isn't that what it all comes down to?
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Showmax strategy partly is a good one from my point of view, in that if somebody's leaving DSTV completely, they're more likely to then still subscribe to Showmax to get some of that content, like I do. So, I mean, I'm a Showmax customer. I don't have DSTV, but I do enjoy some of the stuff that's on there. So I guess for them, rather retain that and potentially getting a sport-loving customer on that for now, move down to a cheaper package. So they're catering to what's not on the DSTV basic package in a way when it comes to the sport potentially. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, get those guys and then hopefully eventually have a sports offering, sports-only offering.
Yeah. Martin in the comment room says, "Good day, mate. Greetings from down under. How's it, Martin?
how's it looking tomorrow or yesterday?
Sorry,
no, I'm talking about the time difference. How's it looking?
I don't know. Yeah. It must be about 8-9 p.m. in the evening in Australia. Martin says, must be Steve Hoffmeyer causing the subscriber fall off. I don't know about that, Martin, but maybe it had some impact." Martin, tell us, what are subscription TV services like in Australia? Obviously, you've got Netflix and Amazon down there, et cetera, but what's the equivalent of DSTV in Australia? Is it Sky? I'm not sure. And what are their prices like if you want to buy, for example, a premium bouquet with sports options attached to it? Can you buy the sports separately? I'd be quite keen to know. But yeah, difficult times at MultiChoice, and I suppose it was inevitable as the competition finally arrived, because DSTV has effectively been a monopoly in paid television in South Africa for many, many years, and now they're getting a run for their money, and competition's always good. Obviously, job cuts hurt, and you don't want to see them, but if those skills are good, they'll get reemployed elsewhere.
Yeah, look, and technology has been doing this for a long time. This is nothing new, right?
Yeah,
it is up to the business to make the right decision if they're going to plan ahead, knowing what is going to happen. But yeah.
Martin says it's Martin from the future.
So what's happening, carte blanche tonight? Let us know.
I guess that means you and I, Richard, are living in the past.
Well, maybe you can give us some Bitcoin info. I don't know what's happening in Bitcoin in Australia. On to a few hours ahead.
Yes. Give us tips, Martin. We can trade on it. Right. What else do we need to talk about? Naspers. So they, of course, spun out MultiChoice not long ago. So some people might argue that they saw the writing on the wall and decided they were going to exit while the going was still relatively good. I do think that MultiChoice still has a strong business, even though they're under pressure at the top end of the market. They're growing very strongly at the lower end. And the African market, the broader African market outside of South Africa, where broadband is really underdeveloped, I think there's a huge untapped potential that they can potentially tap into still. So don't discount MultiChoice. I think they, I think there's still a lot of legs on that business, even in the legacy satellite broadcast side of it.
Yeah, for sure. But we know they need to innovate more, or at least I guess the technology is there. It's just we want to see those licenses that we want to watch. And I think sport is the biggest contender. So it's making, I guess, making all the right moves, not losing all those customers. I don't know. It's a tricky business. But if anybody can do it in South Africa, and the competitors have certainly shown them that there is a market of people desperate for online streaming.
Yes.
Online streaming content.
Yeah. Rochelle in the comments says there's also an influx of Android TV boxes that have hit the South African market. That's also very true. Very cheap.
Very good point,
Some of them very nasty, cheap and nasty Android boxes, but they're out there and people are using them to consume services. And we should also not forget that that video services are not only being delivered by the big international giants, but South African companies as well. Cell C has Black, although I don't think it's doing terribly well, certainly not from a financial perspective. And then Vodacom has VideoPlay, which is more aimed at smartphones and perhaps tablets. But that's doing incredibly well. I think they've got over 1 million downloads of that service since launch.
Have you used that at all? I mean, I haven't. Too familiar with it.
I'm not.
But I guess that the content is also, I mean, it's limited to a few things, right?
It's more aimed at smartphone users. I don't think it's meant as a lean back experience, whereas Netflix is. So Netflix, I think, is more of a direct competitor to the traditional DSTV. But let's not forget, a lot of people are consuming content on their phones. They, they're watching video on public transport. They, even when they're in the home, they're consuming. And a lot of people in high LSM groups are also doing that. They're watching Netflix on tablets and phones, not necessarily on TVs.
I'm watching a surprising amount of stuff on my phone still. I mean, the screen size obviously is not a good space where you can actually enjoy it. You know, if you prop up making dinner, for example, propping up either a YouTube video or something to put in the background, it's much more effortless and it's a better experience. I was going to say something else and I completely lost my train of thought on the whole MultiChoice thing with I've also recently rediscovered that a lot of people are still downloading content. A lot of people are still going on sites, downloading movies and series and then just putting it onto their devices.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's a majority, but, you know, having heard what some of the new sites are and just having to go and look at it, I don't need to download anything. Everything is available to me on streaming that I want to watch.
Yeah, you get fiber at home, so
exactly.
You just do it on demand. But a lot of guys, and I have seen this, people go to work where there's a corporate Wi-Fi connection and they use that Wi-Fi connection to, you know, they might have a Netflix subscription and they download it to their device and they watch it in the evening.
Yeah, and let's not forget, you can use a couple of people, there's a couple of users on Netflix that you can have. I guess people are sharing accounts. Well, the other thing I'm interested in, we were talking about sports as we always do when it comes to this type of thing. I do know there's a few international services that you can subscribe to that actually streams. Obviously, these aren't legal streams. They pick it up somewhere else.
Yeah.
And rebroadcast it. But you know, I'm sure these things are still running. There's people that subscribe to them too, or at least the more tech-savvy users.
Yeah, as Rochelle points out, that's also what you get with some of these Android boxes. He says, I'm still a DSTV premium subscriber, but I can see the attraction of a once-off cost to stream almost any content, in brackets, legality aside.
I mean, those things change like torrents, right? I mean, there was a time that I hunted out those streams because I didn't have any other access to it. You know, I didn't want to go out and do. And there were a few floating around. They're not reliable at the best of times. For a few games, there were some good ones, but... You know, again, it's not the quality that you're expecting. I would much rather pay for that service, but there isn't that option, right? It's a grand or nothing, really, or 800 grand or nothing.
Yeah.
But now that money all goes to beer, unfortunately, for you. At the pub, of course, over the course of the rugby season, I must add.
And what was that in that bottle you showed me off screen just now? Show us.
Oh, this is a paperweight now, but made by a friend of mine. This is... good old moonshine or Witblitz, apple flavored one.
Oh, no. Yeah. Better you than me.
No. That's, I use it to clean the sinks with.
And the drains. Clean your own drains when you drink.
it's got such a high alcohol content, I can clean electronics with it. You just douse it in there and it dries off very quickly.
Just don't get it too near to an open flame.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, we digress.
Like I said, it's a paperweight, yeah.
We digress. Let's talk about NASPAT and Protus. Mm. Protus, what do you think of the name Protus, Richard?
Oh, it's very ancient sounding. But
it's Latin.
Like an evil corporation sounding name.
Maybe that's what they went for, yeah. So they're spinning off their international assets, including all their international consumer businesses, into this new business, which is going to list on Euronext Amsterdam. And it's all part of Naspers' grand plan to unlock value for Naspers shareholders. And, of course, Naspers shares are trading at something like a 30 or even 40% at sometimes discount to the value of their 31% stake in China's Tencent, which is one of the biggest consumer internet companies in the world. And this is all about hopefully narrowing that discount. So they wanted a new name for this company. It was called NewCo for several months, and they finally announced in their results this week that they're going to be calling it, after going through hundreds of potential options, they're going to call it Protus, which is Latin apparently for going forwards or just forwards. I don't know.
And there wasn't really any cool African language word that would do it better.
Yeah, maybe that's not what they wanted to go for.
More international, yeah. Still, I mean, it's such a big part of the South African, you know, heritage there. It would have been nice to at least retain that in the international stage.
So this company is expected to have a market capitalization of over $100 billion. That's about 1.4 trillion rand, just to give you a perspective of the scale of this thing. But when I saw Protus, I thought, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, it kind of made me think of Presonus. I don't know why. Audio hardware company, which makes great products.
I think in 2019, Protus sounds very 80s or 90s, you know, it's not maybe even early 2000s, you know, you're trying to sound futuristic back in the day. Doesn't really matter, I guess, maybe not, but these are supposed to be a bunch of creatives after all.
Yeah. And I suppose it's difficult because this company operates in how many markets around the world? They're going to have to register the trademarks in dozens and dozens of countries and probably try and secure the internet domain names as well. So it can't be easy. You can't come up with some regular term that someone would have trademarked it, or they would have registered the internet domains. And Protus, not too many internet domains registered under Protus. I wonder if they've registered the .com yet. If not, I think quickly cyber squat.
Go for it. I'm sure they would have looked at that.
I'm sure they've done that, yeah. They would have done all of that before they announced it.
There is a very nice kick in finding a domain name still today that's got a really cool, short, punchy something. I do like to buy one or two every year when I come across them.
It's pretty much impossible to get a four-letter .com name now. Mm. They're pretty much gone. If you do want one, you're going to have to pay someone.
Yeah, but a lot of the squatting companies also sit under them and they just push up the prices. It's not worth it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm all for the IP address. So I think that's the new DNS. Just give out the proper server IP address.
No one's going to remember that, though. That's the problem. Unless you've got
that. Who cares, man? It's retro.
Unless it's like Google's 8.8.8.8, which you obviously
can't quite easily. Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. But I mean, we digress even more.
So Martin's replied from Australia about the TV options there. He says 7 plus 9 now and 10 are the free channels here. Netflix and Stan are huge streaming services. Never heard of Stan.
Stan?
Most people stream over National Broadband Network, NBN. Foxtel is the DStv alternative here. Of course, Foxtel, Rupert Murdoch. Not seeing lots of satellite providers here. Sydney's...
Yeah, I'm sure broadband isn't a problem there.
Yeah, well, they built that hugely controversial National Broadband Network, a huge cost, government-led thing, which we looked at doing potentially at one point. Thankfully, we gave up on that idea. But it was a bit of a mess, if I can recall, and very controversial in that they created this sort of government infrastructure rather than allowing it to the private sector.
Australia also isn't known for being the most open and liberal, right? Am I right in saying that? I mean, they very much... Video games, high violence video games and shows and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they've got a lot of regulation there. And I've heard people say that it's a bit of a police state. For example, you just don't drink and drive if you go there, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, yeah.
Yeah. And if you
do, again, they do have the infrastructure to allow you to get around. So
yeah,
it can be hard on it.
Yeah. Right. Bitcoin, as he says, looking over to his Stream Deck, $10,651. Sure. Friday night, it ramped through. Not only ramped through 10,000, and then the next morning it went straight through $11,000. I think it peaked at around 11,300. And it's come back slightly, but it's still trading above $10,000. Incredible run. It's doing incredibly well. I wouldn't be surprised to see this thing back at $20,000 by next year, maybe even this year. Mm. And it's being driven, it seems. No one actually really knows, but it seems to be being driven by all the positive sentiment coming out of Facebook's Libra. And I say Facebook's Libra, but it's actually, well, it's an idea that was come up, that was invented by created by Facebook. It's got a number of backers from around the world, including South Africa's Naspash, by the way, through their PayU subsidiary. Each of these backers are joining a consortium. I think it's called the Libra Foundation. They had to stump up $10 million each to be a founding member or founding partner in this foundation, the Libra Foundation. It's certainly not chump change, and you have to be pretty serious if you're going to invest in this. Now, I actually had a good chat with Bob van Dijk, who's the group CEO of Naspat, on Friday evening. And I'm planning to post that story on Tech Central a bit later today about why Naspat has decided to back Libra. So look out for that piece. But I think it's a significant development. I think in some respects, reading the media coverage, I think it's been a bit underplayed. This has the potential to take cryptocurrencies into the mainstream and do it very rapidly, especially given Facebook's 2 billion plus active users.
Yeah. But I mean, Libra isn't straight up a cryptocurrency, is it? It's still backed on national or currencies.
It's a so-called stable coin in a way. It's not like going to be like Tether, where it's exactly one-to-one, as I understand it, but it's going to be... it's going to drift within a few percentage points at most of the value of the fiat currency or fiat currencies that they decide to peg it to. I don't know a huge amount yet, but apparently they're looking to potentially not only peg it to the dollar, but to a whole basket of assets, of currencies, and possibly other things.
Yeah, there's going to be a bunch of things that's going.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I mean, if it's at this size, it's probably the only way to do it, because otherwise it's going to be way too volatile. Somebody's going to have to foot that bill, right? And if your value isn't there the next day, nobody's going to use it.
Mm.
It's going to be very interesting to see how it is executed, especially with the international transfers. And it's probably going to be expensive if you think about it, because it's just spending money on your credit card is expensive. Now you have to go to two or three institutions who's potentially going to be involved in getting the money to person X in country Y. But if the technology is there and I can do it, then the model is set, right? And now we can start using it, and maybe there's competition, maybe not. But because it's Facebook, it's a little worrying.
That was my initial reaction as well. Do we trust this company? I mean, given all the data breaches and all the rest of the stuff, do we really want to be giving them insight into our financial lives? But I think Facebook has been clever about it, in that they're not the ones who are going to be controlling this. It's going to be done through this Libra Foundation, if that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. And they've already got, I can't remember what the number is, two dozen or so, I think, founder members, and they're looking to get 100 on board by the end of this year or by the time they launch. And no doubt these will also be big, evil corporations. And, you know, they are. I mean, we've got companies like Uber Technologies, PayPal, Naspers, Spotify, I think, is involved. So there's a lot of them, but they're all very big corporate listed, a lot of them listed entities. Mm-hmm. But I think that because it's not Facebook who's controlling this thing, you know, they came up with the idea, they're a participant, and obviously they're going to be a meaningful participant in this, and they're developing this wallet called Calibre, or Calibra, sorry, and they're going to be rolling it out into their messaging apps. But it's not, at the end of the day, going to be controlled alone by Facebook. There are going to be multiple corporations. And the question then is, do we trust these major corporations that are participating in this? But maybe, given they're going to be so many big companies, they're going to keep each other in check.
Yeah, let's hope the more people involved here makes sure that everybody is keeping an eye on everybody else. But the thing is, Facebook is still the conduit, right? At the end of the day, that's still the way that the end users can interact with the system, right?
Yeah.
Or the only way. It's not like you can go through PayPal, and this, you will maybe be able to use PayPal in conjunction, but Facebook's intentions is certainly to keep people in that in the app or in the Messenger app or in Facebook itself.
Yeah, of course.
And their track record with that part of their business hasn't been great. Mm. So, I mean, and I'm just thinking out loud here, really.
Sure.
Waxing lyrical. But, I mean, if it's easy to get into your account or get into certain parts of it, or some things get, data gets leaked, you know, money could potentially get transferred out of your wallet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So security does play a big role of how, you know, if your PC is open and somebody can just go in. Obviously, they will address this with biometrics on your phone and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about Facebook here and now their track record. But I do think it's a fantastic thing overall for just technology and money in general. How are we going to perceive it going forward? We know everything is going to be intertwined. Your health data eventually will end up with us too.
Yeah.
It's just how do we make sure that it doesn't get used maliciously, and that I don't get disqualified on my banking system because Facebook picks up that I go to this place, or you know, I post all my beer pics and that type of thing. So, yeah,
you can buy your beer with Libra in future.
But then they will know that I buy my beer.
They will. Yeah. So Bitcoin rising on the back of this, you know, the expectation being that this Libra is going to make cryptocurrencies mainstream, and therefore Bitcoin must benefit on the back of this. It's an interesting argument to have. I don't know if that is what will happen, because at the moment Bitcoin is not being used as a transactional currency at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like open source software versus sort of big proprietary software companies. You know, there's been a lot of development. Bitcoin is kind of like the open source community. A lot of spirited, keen, interested people. A lot of passion in the community, and they've built this amazing thing called Bitcoin. And similarly, we saw the same thing in the Linux community. But I wonder if the whole thing is kind of going to be superseded and taken over by big corporates, like proprietary software has become a huge business for companies like Microsoft and Oracle and Adobe and SAP. I wonder if we'll see something similar emerging in cryptocurrencies, where, you know, Bitcoin will always be there and there'll be an enthusiastic community developing these coins. But the real crypto business, the real money, is going to be made by these perhaps more closed crypto ecosystems being created by the likes of Facebook.
It's a very good question. It's a very scary thought, right? Because we have seen this happen with so many other industries, just not at the scale with something so new. Yeah. And I think it's very possible that, and this is exactly what we're seeing now, they want to take charge of this. Now, the benefit of this is that people would get used to, oh, this is crypto, but oh, okay, it's Facebook, I can use it now, you're probably more likely to look at something else. That is a benefit of this potentially. But again, they are so big. Does it really matter if would it be easy for another competitor to come in if they hit all of their users, which is virtually everybody?
I don't know. And that's obviously what they're counting on. But in some respects, they're emulating WeChat or whatever it's called in China, QQ.
WeChat is
Weixin.
Yeah.
And that's already being used for payments. So I'm not sure they use cryptocurrencies, but I think it's all pegged to the Chinese currency. But it is based on fiat currency. But I think Mark Zuckerberg has seen a huge opportunity to emulate what WeChat has successfully done in China. And at the end of the day, that's what Zuckerberg does best, right? He takes brilliant ideas from other people and he copies them, like he did with Snapchat. He basically just took Snapchat's best features and put them into Instagram and into Facebook. And he's done it again and again and again. So why not copy WeChat?
Well, exactly. And then use kind of the best of the technologies, because the real benefit, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the real benefit to using kind of a blockchain-based currency is to allow the technologies to better monitor these things, but also to make it easy to send money to various places. And eventually, you can probably undercut the banks, because if I send a digital But from my place, from my wallet to your wallet, I can cut out everybody else. We just need for the regulation to change. Mm. And if you have a lot of companies lobbying for this in the US, which will undoubtedly happen now that we have a lot more companies involved here, well, that replication, that kind of overflow effect to the rest of the world will is inevitably going to happen.
If I was one of these big providers of traditional international remittance services, I'd be in a flat panic right now.
Oh, yeah. And I think Africa is a massive market for that.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of cross-border money being sent back and forth. A lot of interesting players we're seeing at the moment. I'm working with a few, and others. I see some things on the inside, and it's really interesting. Well, the space and the players, at least. A lot of people are gunning for this way. What's the easiest and quickest way to get money across the border? Unfortunately, there's also a lot of charlatans, and it's expensive potentially. Your money could get lost. You need a big stable system, or you need to be backed on a big stable system for this to work. I think Facebook's going to be a competition, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, just in the and the thing is, everyone's on WhatsApp, so you integrate a payment service into WhatsApp, and it changes the game because I need to send you some money quickly, Rachat. Do I fire up my banking app? Oh, WhatsApp, I have 10 rand.
Yeah, and you literally just press a button, it sends it.
Yeah,
yeah. It makes the play a lot more. You can see where what they are thinking about. Mm. But thinking two steps ahead again, if they own that space, if they own most rands and cents, if I can put it like that, they own the small change, the little bits of money that people send around. I mean, they're not going to take my salary because my bank will still handle that for the most part.
For now,
a lot of people but there's a lot of people with cash, and small amounts of salaries.
Yeah.
The question is, will you be paying your domestic with it? You know, will you be paying random people with it, or is this where I would go to Gumtree and buy something that's give you
three? Remittances is where I can see the big value initially being here. So, we know that there are about 4 million Zimbabweans living in South Africa. They've got family at home. They often need to send money home. When they do that, they're often getting ripped off by the providers of those services. And in many instances, they give cash to people to take across the border and that sort of thing, which is very risky. So I think that as long as it comes in at a very good price and it's easy to use, then it's going to be a no-brainer. People will just use WhatsApp or Messenger and send money that way.
Yeah, WhatsApp, I think, is a big player. Yeah, WhatsApp is a very interesting player.
It's huge.
That's even – I mean, yeah, you probably have more people on WhatsApp, right, than you have Facebook.
Definitely in South Africa, yeah. I think it's a game changer. I think it's an absolute game changer. What it means long term for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, I think that's less clear right now.
Mm. I mean, the other things we're going to start seeing from this too. I mean, you're already logged into a lot of websites. I mean, I say you, but hypothetically speaking, a lot of people are logged into websites using their Facebook account.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you're into an e-commerce store.
Yeah.
Your details are there. You can pay. I mean, there's a lot of benefit to having like this cool integrated system. But the problem with a lot of information and everything resting on one platform, so to speak, or one provider, let's just hope they can separate these things well enough for that not to be an issue.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, very interesting times. I look forward to seeing how money changes.
Yeah, it's launching next year. For the first time, I see, purely as a result of this, I was just dabbling in Bitcoin before. I thought, oh, this is fun. It's a nice speculative instrument, and it's a way to have some fun and learn. But since this Libra announcement, I am now convinced that crypto money, cryptocurrencies, in some form, digital money, if I can call it that, is going to change the world.
Yeah, I mean, coins are already dead, without a doubt. And you can see it everywhere. We're kind of the spearhead with the techies and the geeks who kind of use all these cool technologies. But there's no reason to draw cash anymore. I don't know when last you draw cash, but there's, unless you go to a market or something, and you know they might, but every place now accepts some kind of scan QR payment.
Mm.
And that's kind of taking it a step further now. So, very, very close to a coinless, which I think is a good thing. We just need to make sure that those people that are managing these processes are also kept in check.
Yeah. Certainly, I mean, I think there's a move towards away from cash, but we're still on fiat, even though when you hand over your credit card or your tap with your smartwatch at the point of sale or whatever you do, you're still using fiat currency. Remittances is clearly a huge area that that crypto players like Libra, like others, can get a real early advantage. I suppose the question is, why would you adopt something like Libra to do your daily shopping? And maybe that's not what Facebook's trying to do.
Well, eventually it would, I guess, if you log on to your favorite online shop and they just pay, just check out.
Yeah. It needs all that integration. Once the integration is there, then there's no...
Yeah. And then we can start seeing the integration where Facebook knows where you are, right? So you walk into a shop, walk into your local spa, and they know who you are, and you walk out with your goods. I mean, these are just kind of add-ons, so to speak. You just put switch on that plug and have the sensors. And you know, I'm saying it's easier than what it is, but that is a reality that we're going to see. And having all of these things in one under one umbrella makes a lot. It's going to happen a lot quicker because they obviously will own the integration.
Yeah,
so that's.
I'm not sure I'd be using the Calibra wallet or whatever it happens to be developed by Facebook to do my daily shopping because I don't want Mark Zuckerberg to know what I buy on a daily basis.
Oh, you'll totally sell the advertising based on that.
Totally. Do you know you bought this milk last week? But if you go up the road to this shop, you can get the milk for 50 cents less.
That's not a bad
Facebook
thing.
Will be inundated with all this advertising. I suppose it's not a bad thing.
Look, if it's used smartly, yeah. I mean, the way, again, Facebook's track record is the thing that's worrying you. It's not like, that we know that these things can be executed.
That's the problem.
In a humane way. Like, people can actually say this is for good of humanity. So it keeps prices in check and make sure that, but somebody's going to pay for that ad to make sure that his ad pops up over yours to make you think it's 50 cents cheaper, maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
They can't check every single ad everywhere to make sure. So, it's good and evil. And I guess we have it with everything, but this just makes that evil part a little trickier to spot.
Mm. Martin says, here in Australia, lots of people use NFC-capable devices at point-of-sale endpoints to tender, hardly see cash. I'm seeing that here and more in Joburg, actually. I just tap my card wherever I go.
Tap to pay.
Tap to pay, it's super convenient, and I actually think it's more secure, despite some people claiming it's not. I think it's more secure than inserting your card into the terminal, especially when you with a small amount, when you have to put a PIN in every time, whereas if you just tap to pay, you don't have to put a PIN in if it's less than a certain amount, depending on the rules set up by your bank. So it's taking off.
There is some. I had an interesting quick chat with the petrol attendant the other day because I always ask, do they, can I tap?
Yeah,
and I didn't say that. The problem with tap to go is you obviously have that limit, like 50 rand, so that you don't have to. And obviously, this is now, there is still a weak point on the system, but people steal cards and they tap a few times and get the cash. So I don't know if they spin a story to the person, the attendee side. Because there's still the weak point, right? If you allow somebody to tap a card five times, not suspicious at all. but it's possible, I guess. So that's the security. Yeah.
It's like carrying cash, which is why there has to be a limit on it. I mean, there has to be a limit. I think it's 500 rand on my bank.
Mine's 100 bucks. Anything over 100 bucks or 80 bucks or something.
Okay. The bank should actually let you set it yourself in their online banking systems. But it's convenient, and I like the fact that I don't have to put a PIN in. And I know that if I lose my wallet, if someone steals my wallet, I potentially lost 500 rand if they're going to tap that card. But I'm willing to take that risk.
Can you switch off your card in your app? Because I must actually check now, but I recall seeing in my banking app that I can actually switch it off. If my card goes missing, I just switch it off.
You're probably with Nedbank, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had that functionality for a while. I don't know if FNB does it. They might, but I'm not sure.
It's something that I think every bank, I mean, it's such a silly thing. Why can you not switch off? So mine should be switched off all the time, and only when I know I'm going to go out for tonight, I'll switch it on.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of admin that I have to do, but it means that any other time, nobody can transact on that card anyway. Online transaction or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, we often have this conversation. Tranwall, the company that developed this technology, right? We wrote a story about them a couple of years ago. The tech is there and they showed it to us. You can do all of these things, set all of these things in your card. I don't know.
Martin says, some of my friends don't use wallets at all anymore. NFC-capable phone does the job. Well, I own an NFC-capable Garmin smartwatch, and I was just starting to use that when a few weeks ago I managed to break my wrist. So this isn't exactly suitable for putting a Garmin watch over, so I haven't been wearing my watch lately. But as soon as I get this off again in a few weeks' time, I'll be having my watch on again, and then I can just tap my watch wherever I go and make payments, which is very convenient.
Yeah, that is actually, yeah, that is the future. Once you leave your wallet at home, then there's truly no reason to worry about it, because your phone is much easier to control than a wallet in many ways. And a wallet, I was thinking about it the other day, having this bulky thing in your pocket, it's ridiculous. Mm. I think we should do away with wallets. Let's start a new hashtag.
Yeah.
But we don't have enough NFC uptake in South Africa, so it's going to be a bit of a tricky one.
It's getting there, though. I mean, I see NFC-supported POS terminals just about everywhere I go these days. Maybe in the really little small merchants, they haven't got them yet. But in all the major supermarkets, you can tap to pay now. Even Woolworths does it, finally.
Yeah, they switched on that capability. Not all stores. I think I saw one store the other day that didn't have it. But
oh,
yeah,
really? Okay.
I think most handheld terminals have it. Still a few. A lot of the smaller, I think, Chinese-based handsets that I've seen don't have that at all. But I think that's just also who spends the money on getting a new terminal, right? So a smaller business would be less likely to spend $3,000 on the new terminal.
Yeah, yeah. Pick and Pay, I think, was the most aggressive in rolling out NFC. I seem to recall that they had them first, and then the Spars, and then Checkers and Woolworths were a bit slow. But they all have them now.
Oh, do they? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just don't watch mainstream TV, but I don't see any marketing around that, or I don't see any talk about it, really.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Right. What did I do with my show notes? What else do we need to talk about? Oh, we need to talk about Cyril Has a Dream. Let me click that button over there and get Cyril on the screen. Cyril Ramaphosa, our president, State of the Nation address delivered last week, said that they would be delivering the communications minister would be delivering her long-awaited policy direction on spectrum allocation within 30 days of his speech. So it's probably about 26 days now. That was supposed to be delivered before the election, and it's many other deadlines have been missed already. So let's see if this one actually gets met. But he stood up very publicly in Parliament and said, let's do it. So I think it's going to happen finally. So that's some good news, although we still need to see the content of this policy direction before we celebrate too much. Then the other thing that he, in quite a tech-focused speech, actually, he said that South Africa wanted to build a new smart city, which would be linked with bullet trains to other centers around South Africa and would be developed based on the technologies of the fourth industrial revolution. And I think everyone collectively sighed over that and said, well, why do we need a new city in South Africa? How about improving the ones we have right now? And I tend to agree with that sentiment. If you want to build a tech hub, you know, do it in Joburg, do it in Cape Town. The private sector has already kind of created these informal tech hubs anyway, places like Stellenbosch around the university there. And maybe there's an argument that there needs to be some government support for this sort of thing. But, you know, spending tens of billions or more building a new city somewhere, especially given that the government doesn't have any money because of the state of the economy and the inability to collect or raise additional money for the national fiscus, it all kind of looks like a pipe dream.
Also, track record with spending and how large sums of money don't get appropriated correctly, that to me is a worrying thing. Yeah. It's like handing
corruption
over money to kids in a toy store. I think that is what we're looking at. We should certainly be looking. The private sector has done a lot of fantastic things, and I think it's actually probably better managed by local communities, a lot of the tech innovation side that we're looking at.
Yeah.
But we certainly need to be looking at a lot of other bases in South Africa, well, base issues in South Africa with that money if we're going to be spending that much money. Mm. You know, the foundation is still a bit, you know, we need to get a lot of basic stuff right.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about across all the sectors, not just technology.
Yeah.
It's something that kind of I was thinking about the other day when I was driving. You know, every morning, every day that I drive, taxis break the law. They go over the robots.
Yeah.
I'm actually on a point where I'm going to buy a dash cam just to kind of entertain myself and see how many I can look. But I don't think I've ever seen one recently that obeys the law. Now, that type of thing has massive ramifications for people on the road, right? Now, everybody feels dismayed because this guy's breaking the law and I'm agitated because I'm late for my meeting. And those little things have big repercussions. So sorting out traffic is an important thing.
Mm.
Then, you know, that's
where money should be right. Let's get the basics right. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I think that takes care of our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features, And where are my show notes? There they are. Our winner this week is Sweep South, started by Aisha Pandor, who I think is the daughter of Naledi Pandor, and her partner, Alan Ribic. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Probably not, actually, thinking about it. Ribic, not sure. But they started Sweep South together, and it's been a hugely successful business. They, if you don't know them, I think most people do, but if you don't know them, they provide home cleaning services on the internet. Mm-hmm. And they've got a team of cleaners who they vet and look after, and you basically order a cleaner, and they'll send the cleaner to you, and that's pretty much it. It's kind of like a home cleaning service, so the Uber of home cleaning
service. Uber of home cleaning service. Great idea. Fantastic idea.
Yeah, and they're our winner this week for attracting a 30 million rand investment from Nasbout, and. They haven't just disclosed the stake or the percentage that they're taking, so we don't have a valuation on Sweep South. But it's a big chunk of money for an internet startup in South Africa.
Let me predict now, in 2021, we'll probably have a talk again, pick them again, because they'll be integrating Libra into their payment system. So now
yeah, everyone will be doing that probably, unless the regulators stop Facebook, which is a distinct possibility.
Oh, yeah.
And our loser this week is MultiChoice, finally facing competition and unfortunately having to start to retrench staff. 2,000 staff is a big hit in our economy, and not great for those employees, and not great for the sector more broadly. But they have said they are going to try and reskill as many of those people as possible, and try and retain them if they can in new roles. While also honoring bursary subsidies that they provided to those employees that are currently studying, so not leaving them entirely in the lurch. That's our winner and loser of the week. Rechard, what is your pick this week? As I look for the screenshot, there we go.
So, Duncan, you know I'm a bit of a you may or may not know, I'm a bit of a Mario Brothers fan.
I didn't know that, no.
I've got some paraphernalia around my office at the back there. You may see a mushroom or two. There's a cube.
I didn't know you played anything other than PUBG.
Well, there's a close relation to what I'm about to talk to you about, and PUBG.
Okay.
But you know, Mario Brothers is just an all-time classic legendary game. And it was the first game that I saw that made me go, wow, for computer games. But I digress. My pick today... is a really interesting take on Mario Brothers. And I'm also just trying to find the link, because it's not a very straight-up link to... We'll put it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
It's called Mario Real. And it essentially pits you against 100 other people to play the game. Now, it's a bit interesting. So Battle Royale, the game genre, it's essentially you 100 people start a game and one person wins. So you kill one or two people, everybody kills one or two people, and then a few battle it out at the end.
So it's PUBG in 8-bit, in other words.
Yeah, but it's not quite PUBG. You don't shoot anything. You just need to complete the game. You can see the ghost images of all the other players around you, but the battle is to finish the game first. And you can skip. I mean, obviously, you don't all start at the way that the levels start is slightly different. So various games start at different levels. Mm-hmm. But your objective is still to finish the game first. Obviously, it's very easy to die, because if somebody bounces a block in your way, or if there's a turtle or something, you can run through each other, because it's still a platformer.
Okay.
But it's a lot of fun. As if you enjoy the Mario Brothers style game, it puts a new spin on it. 70 to 100 other people play along with you, and you need to finish it. I didn't get far. I managed two or three levels, but I will be playing this again, that's for sure.
It's in
your browser, which is great. Yeah, well, it's browser-based. Anyway,
And it's free.
Absolutely free.
Absolutely.
I see some of the – some of the icons have changed. There's obviously been some copyright stuff, so it looks like Mario Brothers, but the icons are all – the little men don't look like Mario.
Okay.
But it's a lot of fun and well worth checking out. It's very interesting. Nice to see a new spin on an old game.
Yeah. So I just discovered this app this week. I don't know. It just popped up in my Android Play Store recommendations. It's called Time Coach with a Y. And it's from the new digital bank Time Bank, which Patrice Motsepe is behind. And I was looking at the screenshots, just messing around on my phone. I thought, oh, this looks interesting. It'll give you a credit score. And I think there are other apps that do this, or websites where you could pay to get this information. But I decided to install it and check it out. So I installed it. Asked you to put in your ID number, asked you a couple of security questions once you've done that to prove it's you. And then it gives you a credit score and compares that to the credit score of or the credit worthiness or credit rating of other people in your city or your province and also countrywide. Which is really interesting. I've never even looked at my credit score before, so I was very pleased to see my credit score is the maximum possible of 730 points. I'm not quite sure how I achieved that. I guess I've never defaulted on a payment. And was a bit shocked to see that the average South African was scoring poorly in the red column. But fun app. I'm sure there are others that do it out there, but it's the first time I've tried one like this. It's called Time Coach, TimeCoach, and it's available for Android and iOS.
Very cool. If I can add a sub point to yours there too, sure. Something to for every South African should be doing. I don't know how comprehensive this is. That's what I'm saying. You can go to transunion.co.za too, and I think every year you get a free one. You can put a credit record, but it's very detailed. Okay. And I do it every 2 years or so just to check that there's nothing that I'm not aware of. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. So that kind of thing, I think you should be doing regularly in any case, just to make sure that stuff is up above board.
Yeah. Yeah, or just use this app. And if there's a problem, then maybe go that route.
Go deeper, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great. I think that's our show. Shall we do the quiz results?
Yes. How many people may lose their jobs at MultiChoice, the pay TV operator said this week? And the answer is 2,194.
And which South African-owned technology company has invested $10 million to become a founding member of Facebook's Libra? And that's NASPASH subsidiary PayU.
And the third question, EOH this week appointed three new non-execs to its board. Name one of them. And the answers we have accept is Andrew Mtembu, Anushka Bogadov, and Mike Bosman.
Good luck with those names, Rahat. Especially that middle one.
I said that before, yeah, before.
I think it's Anushka Bogdanov. Must be Russian. Sounds Russian.
Yeah.
And NASPASH Foundry has acquired a stake in which South African tech startup for $30 million, and that's, of course, Sweep South.
And the final question, Vodacom has sold its Vodacom business operation in Nigeria, Zambia, and the Ivory Coast to which company? And the answer is Ndila Ngaba's Synergy Communications, or Syncom.
And that's our show this week. Thanks to everyone for joining us on the YouTube live stream today. Search for Tech Central in YouTube. In fact, just go to youtube.com/TechCentral and you'll find us there. And hit that subscribe button and join us on Sundays at 1 p.m. We look forward to you joining us in the chat room. We also have a WhatsApp line. That's 071-999-1111 if you refer to WhatsApp us. That's
and for any personal messages, you can get hold of Duncan at 08.
071-999-1111. If you do want to get hold of me, you can hit me up on Twitter, which is at McLeod D, and Rehart is at Rehart, which is a DT on the end of his name. You must have been on Twitter pretty early to get your name, right?
Early adopter, yeah, I think so.
Very I cool. wanted at Duncan, but it was gone when I signed up, and that was in early 2007, I think.
That's always the problem with new technologies. If you're not there first, you lose your right to that cool name, right?
That cool name, yeah.
To the name, yeah.
Yeah, and I've kind of put McLeod D on everything now because no one tends to use it. although I did manage to grab the McLeod.co.za domain, although I think might have let it expire recently. And
never let your cool names expire, Duncan. Like Bitcoin, one day they'll be valuable.
Yeah, indeed. Speaking of valuable, if you want to find an easy access to all of our podcasts on Tech Central, you can just type podcasts.africa into your web browser to connect to that. And if you're that way inclined, you can also type technology.africa and you'll be redirected to the Tech Central homepage.
Big names, Duncan, big names.
Still trying to figure out what to do with that technology.africa domain, but I will come up with an idea soon enough, I'm sure.
Or sell it for 2 or 3 million. I don't know, whichever comes first, right?
Any offers? I'd probably consider 2 or 3 million.
Call it business development fund.
Dollars?
Ooh,
you mean rand?
Yeah. Maybe $100,000 would be sufficient.
Maybe a couple of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, now we're talking.
Well, that's our show. As always, join us here at 1 p.m. on Sundays. Thanks for listening from Recha and myself. Take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.